This is the one with Daisy from Spaced.
Some training, then PE.
The doc's own health and safety video.
An army of Wurzel gummages.
And some private school spanking.
It's called Human Nature.
Here we go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Cybers, and wow!
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than
Who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode N036 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin. Yes, I am. And joining me in the studio, I feel like I can legitimately call this a studio now, are, to my left, Drew Back When himself.
Hello, chaps.
Hello, Drew. And right ahead of me, Nick Layley.
Yes, quite.
Yes, yes.
Tally-ho.
Bully.
Well done, well done.
You there, boy.
Top hero.
Translate my Catullus. Today we are having a look at Human Nature, which is part one of a double feature containing Human Nature and Family of Blood. And we've been talking for quite a few episodes on Who Back When about how we're finally going to encounter a good episode or a good storyline.
Like we just washed up on this shore half dead after months at sea.
And here we are. So shall we get started? Shall we jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who?
Let's. Bite-sized chunk of Who. After an exhilarating near miss with some off-screen foes, we go to bed with the Doctor, but we wake up with John Smith, a schoolteacher in pre-World War I Britain, with dreams of space adventures, one human heart, and no memory of his past.
Martha, the only one who knows what's really going on, and is going to happen, has to keep him secret and out of trouble, until the Time Lord hunting aliens and the threat they pose expire.
Her job isn't made any easier by the racism of the times, or the Doctor falling in love with a resident matron.
Beast out over, you are welcome.
Aren't you just? Bingo bongo. Shall we do this one a little bit different, Charles? Shall we, rather than go through this plot point by plot point, just assume that everyone, every lady and or gentleman in podcast land has already watched this.
And if you haven't, cheeky little pause. Go
watch
find it.
It.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. It's on lots of things.
It's a fantastic episode. It is definitely worth it.
Yep. And then come back to us for the sweet, sweet debrief.
Yeah, equally exactly. Fantastic.
Yes, oh, well,
as
we
in, don't just think that the episode by itself is, I mean, it's nothing without us, really.
It's definitely not enough. You need context.
Okay, Human Nature. Who wrote this?
Paul Cornell wrote this, I'm reliably informed. And I think this was the last pair of episodes he even wrote.
Or the first.
Oh.
No, he also wrote
Father's Day.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Mm.
He's written some Big Finish audio stories as well. Nothing that we've encountered so far. Shadow of the Scourge, Seasons of Fear, etc., etc. Holy shit, he's written a lot for Doctor Who. I'm looking at TARDIS Wikia, sorry. I'll get back to the room.
Well, I mean, after seeing this episode, I'd be happy to see him write for the TV a bit more.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Well done, Paul. All right, without trying to go through this plot point by plot point, let's please
even
start
though the plot is good.
Yeah,
once.
Let's please start with the very first thing that happens, though. This is one of the most amazing cold opens we've had so far, I feel, on New Who.
Yeah.
Epic in a number of ways.
Oh, in so many ways. And then all the little callbacks to that cold open later on in the episode. Amazing stuff.
I think when I watched this way back when, and actually hark back to that when I watched this a couple of hours ago, is it opens like, was initially what seems like another general Doctor Who episode serial, where being chased by an alien and they'll go somewhere and do something and it won't necessarily be all that tied to why they're being chased. And maybe we'll never know and we'll just end up somewhere else, and kind of like the Web of Fear, we just get like parked off into somewhere else. But that's super integral.
Do you know what this actually reminded me of?
Mm.
This will mean more to you, Drew, than to you, Nick, I think. But one of the comic books that we looked at...
Is the Time Agent's Vortex Manipulator?
Yes,
exactly what I was going to bring up.
Bingo.
Where they're chasing the Doctor... through time, which has anyone else ever been able to do that?
Daleks.
On telly, at least?
I'm not sure.
When he's escaping in the TARDIS, the Daleks are like, it's going that way.
Well, no, but...
let's head him off at the pass.
Don't they, at any point? I feel like they might do.
I'm not sure.
But they're the other time-travelling master race, aren't they?
Bing bong, Future Ponkin here. I can't believe I forgot about this. In season 2 of Classic Who, we got to see the Dalek time machine, chase the gang in even louder, The Chase. And soon we're going to see the Master's TARDIS follow them in the Pertwee serial, The Time Monster, as well. So there. Bing bong. But also just the fact that we have a laser beam being shot into the TARDIS is also reminiscent of, was it the, no, it was the same comic book.
Yeah, the where, cool one, the good one.
Yeah, exactly, the good one. The Matt Smith one, I think it was.
Yeah.
Where there was someone with like a chainsaw or something aboard the TARDIS. And just that feeling of, there's actual destruction going on. They are in flight, they're in the fucking vortex and stuff is blowing up. Someone has invaded the TARDIS in some way. That's not something that we encounter on Doctor Who very often.
Mm. Yeah, no, so it's very, you know, there's a lot of adrenaline in that first scene.
Yeah.
And then it completely gets taken away, gets sucked out of the
cut out completely.
Because we wake up in a bed in early 20th century England.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And the Doctor has, well, apparently no recollection of who he is and so on and so forth.
So vastly interesting. Again, back when I watched it, and why Martha is playing along and the whole thing, and that I've dreamt it. I immediately thought again, when I first watched it, that this would be some sort of, oh, actually, is all of Doctor Who a dream?
Yeah, like, I had the same thoughts. You know, I mean, they couldn't do that to us. I mean, what if they did? Imagine if someone just Dallas'd this whole show.
Well, it could have been that. I feel like there's a Sherlock recently where we're not sure which
is the
right reality.
Yeah, the Abominable Bride.
But we're not sure which is the right reality.
Yeah.
And I think Buffy does one as well.
Yeah, I think so.
At the end, of where we're not sure whether she's, you know, it's because she's been sectioned or that these things are real.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I thought I immediately went there, but then it was too early in the episode for that arc.
Yeah, and also it's not the kind of thing that you expect them to do, or rather, sorry, you assume that they will never ever screw over the fan base in that way.
Well,
dude, that would be terrible. What was the name of the dude in Dallas who dreamt the whole thing?
I don't know, but it was JR's shooting.
JR, yeah, it was JR.
The,
yeah. Imagine if they just JR'd 50, whatever, 4 years of Doctor Who in one go.
That's how I felt watching the new Star Trek movie.
Oh yeah.
Blow up
Vulcan.
Yeah.
Another thing about the cold open that really struck me was the first appearance of the Fobwatch, yeah. At least in New Who. I don't know if it appears in Classic, but, I mean, that's an iconic piece of kit that he'll be carrying around.
Mm.
Is it not?
Yeah, that's gone down in lore.
Yeah.
My one single note, because I was too engrossed in watching it,
go for it,
was, that's a bitchin' sofa. Like, he's got...
oh,
like
yeah.
A, like a school teacher, how big is your fucking flat, and why have you got such a nice sofa?
That is...
Does every teacher have a room like that?
That is
We're
the,
looking at our privately educated...
absolutely not privately educated here. What I was going to say is you're looking at the spoils of Empire right there.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Don't worry, that's about to go next year.
Yeah.
But absolutely, it's like, this set is awesome. Also massive for a school teacher. Like, how much you get paid?
I've got a friend who is a housemaster or an assistant housemaster at Winchester College, and that shit is real.
Oh,
today.
Wow.
Well, you heard it here.
Just to clarify, Drew was not privately educated.
No. Grammar school.
Like, there's a difference.
There were borders, but I was a day pupil. Come on, I'm already a wasp, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, that's right. We all owe you an apology.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not usually the one getting marginalised. I don't like it.
Speaking of which...
I was just about to say...
What a segue. Yeah. We're getting good at this. And then fucking it up entirely by talking about our segues. A lot of racism.
Yes.
Well, at least two very demarcated bits of racism, like we can call it. That was them talking about racism.
Yeah, and
as almost, explicitly as Doctor Who gets.
Yes.
Yes, and there's one Martha acknowledging it, saying like, oh, well, you know, everyone's really good to me, bearing in mind that I'm a... pointing at her face.
I know, mate, guys, and from London.
Oh, yeah, you're a Londoner.
That's lovely.
Awesome. Very, very well written. Like, nice little...
moment between the two characters.
Bingo.
But then a really horrible one.
Where the student goes...
Yeah, Cameron and Osborne arrive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because of that, I've made a note of soundbites here. Let's pop a soundbite in, just because you said that.
New Year's time. Boys like that will be running the country.
Could not have been more prescient.
No.
I mean, that's the entirety of the 20th century is Etonians and Harrow. Yeah. You know, your kin.
What? No! I mean, just because Eton's also in Berkshire does not mean... Anyway, I was going to raise this as a discussion point as well, because dealing with the past in this way is something that Moffat has recently come out as saying he will explicitly take a different path to. Because in the article that came out recently where it said, we did interview a black actor to be Doctor Who and he turned it down, but that gives us points. Right. He said, we've kind of got to tell a lie. We'll go back into history and there'll be black people where historically there wouldn't have been... and we won't dwell on that. We'll say, to hell with it. This is the imaginary better version of the world. By believing in it, we'll summon it forth.
Oh, yeah, I remember
exactly
reading that as well.
What's
yeah,
going
that
on
is
here.
So fucking stupid.
That's
it
crazy. Like,
so
just 1984-ing everything. Let's rewrite history and portray the British Empire
as so
the world in general.
Speaking as a person of colour, not that I speak for us all, but speaking as a person of colour, it's whitewashing this history. When people went through this,
yeah.
Actually, what would be better for our children watching this stuff is that we don't necessarily hide for it, deny that these kids are the children of people that have gone through this. And like, you know, oh yeah, grandma must have just been talking bullshit. No, she really wasn't, man. That shit was horrible.
Exactly.
I really found that despicable. But not
and
this.
And it goes, no, here
it's this episode, I think, yeah, she's quite clearly the poorer subclass. And they went for the nice version of her friend saying, you know, oh, it's because you're from London, and the really fucking despicable version of the two Etonian dickheads. And that was the right thing to do. I think that was a really good, clever way to put it up front there.
Okay, so get ready for some really negative Series 10 reviews many years from now.
And we've actually encountered something as an example of what Moffat said in that interview or in that article in an episode that we reviewed on Who Back When Before, and we discussed it at the time, Girl in the Fireplace, where the requisite percentage of members of the court at Versailles were Africans and whatever, you know, there were black dudes, there were people from the Far East, etc., etc. Like, just everyone is represented because the BBC needs to be politically correct. Yeah. But yeah, it's just not realistic.
You're doing all of us.
History a disservice.
It's history a disservice. Yeah. There's another point, actually, in this episode, in this episode where the headmaster is like, well, the tribesmen from the dark continent, you know, you've got to be shooting them down. That shit happened.
Yes.
That shit happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you needed little Timothy Latimer to say, actually, that is entirely the wrong perspective.
Exactly. They're just carrying spears, whatever it is.
A doctor, let's say a black doctor. And you know, one other thing that I'd quite like to discuss if we took a break from this episode for a second. Who would have been your choice for black Doctor Who?
Oh, well, I mean, I think, was it you, Drew, who already floated Idris Elba?
Yeah, I think that's everyone's top. Yeah. Matches. Although, I heard Richard Ayoade.
Holy fuck, he would make such a good doctor.
So,
very different from Idris Elba. Yeah, but yeah, he would be great.
The black Matt Smith, essentially.
Oh, yes, that is actually true.
Different, weirder.
But certainly, possibly as wibbly and wobbly.
Well, I'm going to say a much drier delivery of stuff. Like, you know, Matt Smith's got great physical comedy. Like, he's wailing, you know. But actually, Richard Ayoade's very, all the comic acting he's done so far, very straight-laced, and it's all in the timing of the jokes.
Ah, but he did also voice a villain in the new Danger Mouse. And
did he?
Pretty slapstick. As you might expect.
Oh, great.
Brian Blessed was Santa, and he was the evil snowman.
Nice.
Yeah.
But yes, I think Richard Ayoade would
He would be
like,
very good, yeah.
Okay.
Would be amazing.
What Moffat is essentially doing is saying we should put on the same plane as all this completely fictional stuff that happens in space. We should also do that with our own history. We should alienate where we've come from and where wasps have come from and where non-whites coming to England have come from, everything.
Well, even more than that, there are kids, you know, all around the world right now, probably listening to this podcast, you know, people, that have a worldview or an experience that is informed by the stuff that happened in 1913 Britain and then 1940 Britain and 1950, you know, and all the way through, that this, like, whitewashing just goes, oh, yeah, no, you're making it up, and you're like, oh, it's not really that bad. When you really think about it, actually, everyone's good. No, some shit happened, right? We're going through a whole rise of that right now. And I would rather a braver writer that does things like Inhuman Nature and tries to present a version of history that has some description of a verisimilitude.
Yeah. And it also just, whenever it appears, it adds a layer of poignancy to what's going on. The only good things we found about the Dalek in New York episodes was actually New York and talking about the actual situation there at the time.
The only criticism that we all shared about, as in not the only, the only non-Dalek-y criticism that we all shared about it was basically we didn't get enough of New York or just day-to-day life.
Yeah. Mm. Whereas in Moffat's, I guess they're all just walking around swinging cane, one of every ethnicity you can round up in Cardiff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that I want to bring us onto that I think is great about this episode is the fucking brutality of it. Like, they're not pulling punches. Like, murder a little girl. That's cool. That doesn't really happen very often, does it, in Who?
Well, do we know that they've been killed?
I think later on we understand that they've been killed.
I mean, we talked about this before we press record, ladies and gents. We haven't rewatched part two, Family of Blood, just yet.
That's true.
So I don't know.
I think it's a new question every time. Every time, and this has happened so much in this series, someone gets changed in some way. Either they spontaneously mutate or an alien invades their body. I think every time it's a new question of degree and reversibility.
That's true. I think I think.
Well, what does that mean then?
Well, what I mean is, as far as I'm aware, she could come back and be a creepy little girl with.
Yeah, maybe she's in one of those green whatever snow globes.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Okay, true. But when I was watching it, and again, coupled with the rest of the stuff that happens in the episode, so many people die brutally, and the stupid, and the weird scarecrow things. I watched that as, yeah, they just murdered a kid. And
they are also called the family of blood,
yeah, exactly.
So one does assume that is
and
a good point.
And, you know, World War One is coming up. You know, yeah. Like,
the kid, what's-his-face, sees his own death the following year, as in sees into the future, yeah.
Because actually, again, like the racism thing, shying away from the fucking brutality of World War One would have been stupid, would have been a really poor writing. Yeah. And this is just foreshadowed, it's prescient.
Yeah, it's good that they didn't skip forward to Christmas Day 1914. Hey, we're playing football, this war's great! Bit muddy, though.
Yeah.
No, that's all you can say about it, though. Just a bit muddy.
Just a bit muddy. Oh, we've got a little cheeky mild case of trench foot.
Nothing I can't walk off.
No.
So anyway, I want to bring up something that we've already skipped over.
Go for it.
Which is that they're singing To Be a Pilgrim as you get the establishing shots of the outside of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think it was intentional that one of the prominent lyrics in that is Follow the Master?
Oh.
Mm.
I did not pay attention to the lyrics. I will be frank about that.
Yeah. I mean, not only is the Doctor...
That may very well be.
The Doctor is walking along as a master...
But
we
also,
all know where this series is going.
Oh, most definitely. That's fantastic.
I did not think of that. I really thought about it like All Quiet on the Western Front, you know, with that bit where they're all hating their school teacher that told them to sign up for the war.
I do not remember this at all.
No, okay. Well, there's a section where the German guys are hating their fucking school teacher that marched them essentially to the recruitment office and signed them up for the glorious war. And this is basically happens in this 2-episode arc. Like, they're being trained to fuck off to war at the behest of their headmaster and or master. So that's where I went.
Mm.
But your point about the actual master...
is probably the reason they picked that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or some confluence of it all. That's really good.
Sure. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's very, very good. Good skills. What about what's her face? Daisy from Spaced. So she's the matron. She's the love interest of this episode.
I'm slightly in love with her. Slightly. She is I did not understand her range as an actress.
I've seen her in something else. I'm not sure what it is, but I have seen her act in something dramatic as opposed to just comedic. But she does just a phenomenal job in this one.
Yeah.
That being said, I really couldn't not see Daisy from Spaced.
Yes.
It's just, it'll be the role that everyone sees in her forever, presumably.
But the voice was incongruous.
She doesn't sound like a chav from North London.
So I really liked the performance. I think it's utterly believable as a sort of school nurse matron.
She was wearing one of those nurse watches on her, well...
Yeah, she was, the upside down ones.
Exactly, yeah. But it looked like it was a fob watch, very much in style with his fob watch.
Oh.
I have no idea if that's going to factor in any... Most likely will not factor in. But, yeah, no, I immediately made a note of it. Oh, fob watch on her apron.
I really liked the romantic tete-a-tete open where they sort of... The books.
Yeah.
And then him falling down the stairs.
Yeah. My note there is Tennant does a good job of playing nervous in that scene. He's fantastic in it.
Yeah.
It's a really lovely scene. Is this the most human we've seen the Doctor so far? I mean, obviously he is actually physically...
Yeah, by definition.
Yeah. But I mean, acting the most human.
Yes. And actually pulling off those things that the Doctor, or Tennant as the Doctor, has tried to pull off in the past. Things like slightly foppishly charming in various guises. He actually pulls off here. This version, I think, is better than any of the romantic scenes he had with Rose. I really feel that way.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
Hmm. Yeah, probably.
So why couldn't you pull it off before?
Maybe, were they boning? Because we said this about...
Yeah, they were... Oh, yeah. Also in my notes, they most certainly boned down.
You reckon?
Yes.
Because that the chemistry on Girl in the Fireplace was off the charts, and they were dating at the time.
Yeah.
So maybe it was...
That's a different thing. And also it was earlier in the show, and Rose was in the episode, yada, yada, yada. In this one, 100%. I mean, he asks her to join him at the dance, doesn't go to the dance, immediately kisses her. Like, just wait, take her on a date first. Like, maybe kiss her at the end of that date.
No, see, I was talking about the actors.
Oh, the actors?
Because Tennant and what's-her-name-ing Girl in the Fireplace were dating.
They were dating. Wait, yeah,
no.
But... Oh, you meant Tennant and
Tennant
Daisy?
Tennant and Daisy.
No,
I don't know that, but the chemistry was amazing.
It was. Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
Do you think so, Drew? I don't think so.
I don't think
so. But it's entirely speculation.
I hope so.
I mean,
I hope he didn't fall down those stairs. That looked painful.
But the characters, the Doc has now... I mean, he 100% got laid, right?
During this episode?
Yes.
You mean John Smith got laid?
Yeah, sorry, John Smith got laid.
I don't know.
Oh, 127%.
Think of how many times Martha bursts in for no reason.
Very true.
And she's still wearing all her petticoats and lovely dresses, and she hasn't even got a shoulder unhitched or anything.
Yeah,
they are being completely above board.
Okay, but all right, so... You know when there's that scene, she shows him her dress? You know that scene?
Yes.
Isn't that a direct segue from the kissing scene? Like, basically, they kiss, they don't leave each other, they just immediately tear each other's clothes off, lick each other head to toe.
No.
Yes.
No.
I swear to God, I'm...
Where does she get the dress from?
They go back to her place, obviously.
No, they go back.
They 100% go back to her place. He goes down on her, then she puts on the dress.
This is not what Paul Cornell had in mind.
You need to chill out.
Okay, fine. Regardless, I'm pretty sure that they did do it. It really does seem
just a theory.
Okay, fine. I would like to think that they did it. Skip the whole going down on each other business. But they did do it. Later on, she's also referred to as your lover by the family of bloods.
Yep.
The only thing I'm getting at is, is this basically the Doctor popping his cherry?
No, because we've already alluded he's a massive poon hound.
Yes,
but he is boning everything.
Yes, but are you right in saying that? Yes. I mean, in my mind, he's got, like, every time and space STD out there.
Yeah, I'm hoping the chameleon arch redid the whole biology of his lips, because that whole ecosystem has transferred to a matron pre-penicillin.
Also,
if not.
Why is everything an arc or an arch in Time Lord fucking technology? Have they just...
Branding. Yeah, that's what it is.
That thing was weird.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
That's a massive thing. All right, I don't have many problems necessarily with all of this. Really like the idea, you know, they needed to come up with some sort of mechanism to come up with this dichotomy of doctor, non-doctor. What the fuck was that?
Yeah, and also he uses this chameleon arch to turn himself into a human. Presumably, not having rewatched the second one, so I can't say this for sure, but presumably he'll use it to turn himself back into a Time Lord.
Yeah, he'll slot the watch back in and reverse the polarity.
Does that mean that this is basically an immortality machine because you can just turn yourself into a creature that has X lives?
I can tell you that that's not what happens in the Family of Blood.
Ah, okay.
It's even less satisfying than that.
Oh,
we'll
God, what
it.
Is it? Is no, it like,
we'll,
oh, open the we'll, fob watch, the
no,
thing
no,
blows
we'll
in
to
his
it,
face?
We'll get to it. Even worse than that, if memory serves.
He suddenly clenches and grows a second heart.
If memory serves, it's even worse. But we'll get to it, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with us for the next episode.
2 weeks.
If there was the plot hole you were talking about, A, Lazarus could have used it.
Oh,
you'd
God,
have been
yeah.
B, Dalek Sek, he could have... used it, and see, the Master wouldn't have had to plague the Doctor throughout time and space to try and get more than 12 lives, so...
Oh, yeah. Also a good point.
So, yeah, let's hope that's not what happened.
Could he have used the Chameleon Arch to spend eternity with Rose? Could he have turned her into something? Could he have used it in some... Could he have turned himself into a human to spend with her?
This isn't what happens 3 series from now, is it?
Could he make more...
I don't think so. I think he's somewhere, like, splits off... These splinters. Maybe it is what happens. Is it? Is it what happens?
Oh, should we stick to this episode?
Yeah,
anyway,
sure. Let's do that.
That thing was... you really had to suspend your disbelief within the realms of Who.
Yeah, also, I would say probably the worst acting Tennant provides in this episode.
The torture.
Yeah, the torture scene.
Oh, the screaming.
Yeah.
Oh, but he loves screaming.
That's the problem.
Freema Eggman does a better job of the acting in that scene. And it makes me believe in the brutality of it. To add to all the other bits of brutality.
Freema is great throughout in this episode.
Yes.
She is spectacular.
Thirded.
Why do people not get how good fucking Martha is?
Yeah. All it took was a good writer.
Yeah.
Paul brought it out of her.
Yeah, too little too late.
Yeah.
She's not even in Blink.
Is she not?
Well, no one's in
Doctor
Blink.
Doctor isn't even in Blink. Hardly.
Hardly.
I mean, she's nominally, but not really.
Okay. I need to rewatch.
We'll get to that. Let's stick to this episode.
Yeah, yeah. 2 episodes. My next note is, he draws very well, but writes like a total spaz.
That's exactly what I've got. Yeah, I haven't got spaz, but I'm just like, aren't you a schoolmaster? Why is your handwriting so shit? Why do you draw in ink blot? How hard is it to shade in ink blot?
Wow, yeah. Very.
And then he draws
by your face.
Then he does the Leo DiCaprio drawing her like a French girl.
Yeah.
And that's in pencil. You know, and really, like, crisp.
Do you think that he wakes up from these dreams, like, all sweaty and panicking, and just half asleep writes or draws something in his
notebook?
Well,
no, that's fine. That's fine, but that's not what he actually says. He says, I write some of them up as fiction. Well, okay.
Oh,
so
yeah, you're
you've
right.
You've got notes. write them up, you lazy prick.
Oh, which, by the way, just as a tiny little parenthesis, just to call back to what we were talking about before, which is another racist interlude in this episode where he explains to Martha, oh, actually, this is all fiction. This is what we call a story.
That is like, ingenious.
Cultural
racism.
Differences. Mm. Yes, perfectly crafted. Very well done.
That's some good racism.
Yeah.
My two notes from this scene are, oh, you do cartoons. It's a bit more complex than that, which is spaced.
Ah.
And the second note is that if he'd been the doctor, rather than saying, yeah, I have this dream that I have two hearts, he'd have gone, yeah, I have this dream that I got two cocks. Get your stethoscope on that.
Oh, wow. Nick is just, ladies and gentlemen, Nick is just laughing. And actually, did you just say why?
Why?
I'm just nodding my head because I'm so impressed with the ingenuity of that plan.
Fair.
Evil, you're an evil man.
Yeah.
Wicked.
Well, let's talk about the family. Let's talk about the family.
Okay, so.
How they recruit. Again, another problem. Another problem.
I have several problems with this, yeah.
Okay, where are you going to go?
No, go for it. Start off.
Is that, so currently they're disembodied snow globes of some description in an invisible ship.
Flying the ship around. Which I can buy that.
Of course we can. We can all buy that. They fabricated and created an army of scarecrows.
Yes. That's where I have my first problem.
Already.
On Earth.
In that specific place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Though they've just landed.
Yes. Well, I think one problem that this episode seems to have is distance, geographical distance. Mm. So when they land / crash, whatever, they land, I suppose, and they see this light in the sky and people just, oh, the doctor goes, well, John Smith goes, oh, it's what we call a meteorite. He says, oh, actually, it looks like that's what they always do. They look like they're really close, but actually that was miles and miles away. And then Martha and her chubby friend just sort of trot along and then they get there.
Because it would have been miles and miles away had it been a meteorite, but it's not.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, actually, yeah, that's pretty good. Okay.
Yeah.
But there is the problem
that, assuming they're not watching the show on their home planet, how do they know to target Earth and specifically the UK?
Oh, but you could say that they've been smelling it. I mean,
from space.
They were smelling it through the time vortex, weren't they?
Yeah, I think that was it, that they were basically still on the trail of the TARDIS.
He says
in the cold open, they'll follow us everywhere, they'll know. So they have some description of way. Maybe they can track where the TARDIS moves to.
Oh, the TARDIS, yeah.
But not necessarily the Doctor. So they've got a vague... They're just like, it's Berkshire. Somewhere in Berkshire.
Surely if that were the case, they would rock up at the TARDIS straight away.
No, he says that he's put the TARDIS
in a woodshed.
No. He says that he's put it on like silent running, basically, and therefore they won't find it.
Yeah. Okay. Story checks out.
Yeah.
So scarecrows, right?
Another thing, a huge problem for me, though.
Another big problem with the scarecrows. So they're like, Farmer John puts his hand straight through one.
Farmer Clerk.
Yeah.
Puts his hand straight through one. So they're obviously very advanced, some description of animatronic, you know, robot, whatever.
Sure.
But it's still straw, because the guy puts his hand clean through it.
I think that's just camouflage.
He puts his hand clean through it.
Yeah, but I think that's just... I mean, it's...
Throwing bits off of it.
Yes.
So, okay.
I have an answer for you.
A super menacing bag of hay wanders up to you.
Yeah.
And it's rude. It's got bad intentions.
Oh, yeah. Very bad.
I'm just going to push it over.
Yeah, structurally very unsound.
Exactly.
But we don't know if maybe there's some kind of... Maybe it has a kind... Oh, fuck, hang
An
on.
Animating
I,
force?
Here's what I'm going to tell you. I'm basically, in my mind, I'm picturing the Terminator skeleton, but instead of a spine, it has a circle, so that you can technically put your hand right through that circle, right through the O... Right through its tummy. And basically, if you were to strip off all the hay and, like, the bag over its head and so on and so forth, you would end up with the stick figure version of a fat dude.
With a massive hole in the middle.
I don't.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
He'll look like one of those Dyson machines that cleans the air in your room.
Why do they walk like scarecrows, then?
Bullshit. That's why.
I like the scarecrows. I mean, they're implausible as shit, but yeah.
They're pretty menacing.
Yeah.
There's a zombie feel to them. Actually, I really tried to Google this, and someone will probably be able to tell us which episode it is. There is a Sylvester McCoy Doctor Who serial, where it's basically a zombie... It seems, I haven't seen it, but it seems like it's kind of a zombie apocalypse type scenario in Scotland. And the way that those zombies, they walk out of a lake and the way that they trudge towards people. I've only seen that clip on YouTube or on TV or wherever. And this really reminded me of that. Anyway.
Fair.
terrible anecdote because I can't tell you which episode it is. Actually, maybe I'll find out in future Ponkinet. Bing bong, me again. The serial I was thinking of was The Curse of Fenric. Bing bong.
Thanks, Ponkin.
Thank you, me, potentially. I have no idea. Yeah.
But they were good. They made me jump a few times.
Yeah. And they are creepy as balls.
Yeah.
Super creepy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, let's talk about the kid with the shining.
Oh, the Love Actually yeah. kid. Why would you tell your bullies that you can shine?
Future Boris Johnson.
Yeah, Cameron and Osborne are the best friends he's got right now.
And little Bojo will come, like, you know.
Bojo. Yeah.
Little Bojo.
Will fucking hell, we're seeing his classical education live on camera.
Catullus, for my morning. Wah, devil day, wah. I've always been able to say things, like the Brexit. Yes, I predicted the Brexit, blah. Little things. So he can shine. This kid can shine. Love Actually can shine.
The shinning.
Yeah. The shinning.
Oh, do you know what? Do you know what else Thomas Brody Sangster, young boy shining, has been in? He is the voice of John Tracy in the Thunderbirds remake series.
What? Amazing.
Yes. Why would I bring that up?
Thank you very much for bringing that up. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, slight non-Whovian tangents. The Rawrmeister of former Who Back When co-host fame has started a new podcast. It's not live on the air just yet, or it might be when you listen to this. It's called Thunderbirds Are Go, ing to be reviewed. And he has...
Rory's choice.
And he has solicited my services as co-host. We have already recorded one episode, and at some point in the not-too-distant future, that will drop.
My purpose in bringing that up now was to embed it so deep in the episode, no one can possibly avoid it. Plug over. You are welcome.
Thank you.
So back to Little Bojo. My one note on Little Bojo is Frodo shining, right? Because he's half Frodo, half kid from The Shining. Because he's got, when he steals the fog watch, he's like, it's kind of like a ring wraith type deal. Yeah. Don't put it on.
I like
otherwise,
it.
Otherwise, what's the fucking King of Witches? We'll come and get you. Does anyone know Lord of the Rings?
Hang on.
Oh, the Witch King of Angmar?
There you go.
Oh, well done. My only note is that he's one of Xavier's gifted kids. Why would you tell your bullies that? That scene is very weird to me. That's one of very few very weird scenes.
That's the show don't tell, isn't it? That's a good exposition with that. You know, we need to know that he has some description of psychic
I feel version. Like that could have been evidenced in other ways.
Speaking as someone who went to a grammar school, which is apparently exactly the same thing.
How many of your classmates were gifted in that way? Do you have ESP?
About half of us. That's how you pass the 11 plus. So...
At 10.
Yeah. Prodigies. Yeah, he's already in the worst possible relationship, almost unbearable, with these two boys much older than him who rule him. So if he can appear cool in any way, then you try it on.
That's a very good point. Actually, hang on. Question. Serious question. Would he be sharing a room with these people? He is way younger than they are. Drew?
At this point, my knowledge of the fag system breaks down.
Okay.
But possibly... I mean, they'd have access to him night and day whenever they wanted their bidding done.
Say it less sinister.
Yeah.
Really?
No, can you just say it?
Yeah, okay. Say it slower.
Yeah,
say it
slower.
Whenever they want
some
their
horse.
Bidding
oh,
done.
Oh, God.
Come here, you little oik. Filth.
That was so awful. So the scene where he goes off to get beer, I thought that was quite good. I think that actor, Baines.
Yeah.
Leighton Baines.
The scene is
funny to me and no one else.
Wait, what?
I don't know, he's a footballer.
Okay.
Baines, he's really good.
He is fantastic,
When he's not watching the spaceship descent.
Exactly.
He doesn't
what I was
know
gonna
what
say.
He's looking at.
Yeah, and why would he just stand there and smile at some mysterious green light descending from the sky? That scene is, I didn't think that was particularly well acted, but then immediately thereafter, he turns into kind of a parody of himself in which he goes like, is that some sort of plane? Are you all right? Are you chaps fine? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, though, when he goes in it, one of my notes is remarkably calm for a 1910 boy that has just figured out there's eight aliens and now he's been abducted. Like, because it's like, oh, that's a rather poor show. Like, are you not fucking flipping your lid and screaming and kicking? He's just sat there.
I felt like he screams when they come for him.
But then he sat there talking to him for a little while.
I felt like he did a pretty good job of being so in shock that he's incapable of acting.
But he acts as well. He goes,
as in not acting as an actor, acting as, you know, reacting. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Please let me go. Please.
Would you mind terribly?
Be a chum.
We have much gold.
Honestly, we own like half the planet. Take a quarter. Take the shit quarter. Take the dark continent. We don't want it. We only have it so we can be racist.
So what's coming for him? Why is he screaming? Is it a scarecrow or is it that weird green
smoke? It's a green thing.
Yeah, green smoke.
I think it's a green thing. Green smoke. Chubby.
Okay.
Because he asks what you look like. Why don't I know what you look like?
Oh, yes.
Show your face.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Cool effect as well, by the way, the invisible spaceship.
Super cool. Spent all of their money on that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They originally didn't want to have scarecrows. They were like these incredibly advanced cybernetic organisms, crazy cool insect robots, but then they spanked it all on one CGI effect.
Stuff with believable skeletons. Nah, we can't afford that.
I think my fat nothing stick figure.
Your polo mint scarecrow.
Yes. That's the only way I can answer your question legitimately, Nick.
There's a giant hole in it. He's the creepiest of the four.
Yes, he is.
Blood. Even though there's a little girl with a red... So again, another thing I've got is like, okay, gotcha, right? You've stolen and murdered a little girl and taken her skin.
Yeah.
Creepy. Creepy, very...
I love that scene. That scene is full throttle.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we're just not holding back. We've been creepy as shit. Here's the creepy music. Now she's being abducted.
She's on a lucky tricycle. But okay, the thing that lost me creepy factor, I'm just like, right, I gotcha. You're a clandestine, you're a horrible interstellar, interdimensional... murderous family, and you've stolen a little girl.
Yeah.
Do you really need the red balloon? Like, what is that giving you?
Camouflage. Like, camouflage.
Yeah, cover.
Just get rid, she's still a little girl. It's not like, oh, yeah, but you ain't got a red balloon. What are you up to, little girl? No one's questioning all the little people without balloons.
It also seems as though they retain their victims' memories.
Yes.
To a degree.
Well, yeah, sure. When he climbs back through the exact... What's his name again? Baines.
Baines
climbs back through the same window he exited earlier.
Mm.
He remembers going out for drinks.
Well, someone prompts him. His friend is like, where's the beer? And he says it's not there.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Poor
sure.
Show, Baines.
Poor. Definitely poor show.
But,
like, poor people's shows.
Yes, you'll be lucky if I make him Chancellor.
Oh, man, such a weird window into your childhood.
My childhood! For fuck's sake! I am not in the cabinet.
Sounds like you're in the closet, though. The closet being, you're a privately educated boy and you just need to come out and let us all know. Don't worry, we won't judge you.
Shall we have a chat about the cricket scene in which the doctor saves a mother's and baby's life? Lives? Saves their lives.
Yeah, both
that,
lives. Why
that
not?
Kid, the kid with the cricket ball, is the most gormless kid.
Yes.
Just picturing his face.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know what cricket is. They've given me this.
The director gave me this ball. Yeah.
They just gave me this, so I'll stop burning things. Now, the doctor's going to diatribe about how they'll be brilliant heroes or something. Something like that, right?
Wait, what? In that scene?
Yeah, yeah, he's talking about...
He's with Daisy.
Yeah, yeah. People to come forth and be brilliant and do whatever. And then he comes forth and is brilliant.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Now, why does that... What would have been better would have been him just randomly solving something amazing. Like a ridiculous thing that he shouldn't and doesn't have the normal capability to do. Mm-hmm. But the throwing the ball isn't necessary... Like, I guess what we're supposed to infer is the doctor can make all those calculations and see what needs to be
done. I think it's two different things. One, it's that... Because it's like a Rube Goldberg machine, yeah. The way he solves the problem.
Yeah, instead of just shouting, you with the pram?
Yeah.
Stop, just for a minute. You'll see.
But
there
the second
go.
Thing is...
But you've been awful
the second
you
thing,
just beamed the kid with the cricket ball. Just crisis averted.
Well, just lamps the mother in the stomach with a throw and just like, oh, and then it's like, oh, okay, I forgive you. I get it now.
But the second thing is Peter Davison's doctor... played cricket.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And this is a callback. This is a part of him, as in part of his memory is actually surfacing.
Oh, do you know what? I'm completely on board with that.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah,
plus
okay.
Point one from me.
Okay, another note of that particular scene, though. Mm-hmm. Gratuitous piano shot. That was the other thing they spent.
Oh, they loved the hell out of that
they
piano.
They did like three fucking angles on that piano drop.
I think it dropped twice, at
yeah,
least.
Yeah, yeah, twice, and once in slow-mo.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
They absolutely were just like, we spent a lot of money.
The way that horror scene, that the tension was created was almost reminiscent of like early Peter Jackson. You know, if you've seen Braindeads / Dead Alive, it's also known as Dead Alive, or Bad Taste, all of the tension scenes are very much like that. You might as well just have music played by Peter Jackson, hummed by Peter Jackson in the background as they show multiple shots of it. Anyway, what sprang to mind in my case? Brendan is the one where they bring a monkey back from some weird island and the monkey bites the main character's mum and she turns into a zombie.
Okay. Is that 28 Days Later? Isn't that Rage Infected Monkeys?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. No, Braindead is awesome. Okay. It's definitely worth watching. It's very funny. Anyway.
Okay, I'm going to call us back just to one thing.
Okay.
Which is that by this point, little Timmy Latimer has stolen the watch.
Yeah.
Or pocketed the watch, shall we say, so he doesn't get in more trouble with the master.
Sure.
Sorry, with his master for looking at it.
Yeah.
And he opens the watch at one point. And sees a cavalcade of villains past. Great villains past. You've got the Cybermen, you've got the Daleks, and then you've got Lazarus.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the Rachmos. And it's, like, the hubris of it all.
Yeah.
And nothing from Classic Who.
No, in fact, loads of the callbacks through. Is it because they think they find them alienating?
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. In the drawings, and very similar in Rose, part one of the revival, where they have like old photos of the Doctor, there are some callbacks to Classic, but there never seem to be any Classic villains. And I wonder if that's just because all Classic villains look like huge cardboard boxes or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it might be partly because it all happened to Tennant, and Tennant is obviously entirely a new Doctor. All these sound that we hear at the same time, all the whispering, could you place any of that in Classic, or was that all new?
I don't remember the whispering at all.
I think that was all new for this episode, for the most part.
Among the drawings, there are drawings of
Paul McGann.
Paul McGann, I was going to say, possibly only Paul McGann of the classics.
The inkblot fucking painting of Rose looked literally nothing like Rose.
Absolutely nothing like Rose.
It's really hard to do blonde in blue.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Oh, one thing that I found really annoying, or not really annoying, sort of funny. The Doc leaves a self-help video, a guided video.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say?
That she skips all these
No, no, no. Questions? I get the skipping. If you watched it a bunch of times, you know where you're trying to get to. Let's just say that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Also, why you don't have chapter select on your
your TARDIS DVD.
Yeah, quite. But that's fine. I'll forgive all of that. Because when he opens it...
Blu-ray.
When he starts the video, he taps it on the screen and goes, is this thing on? Oh, you're a 900-year-old omnipresent technovore of a fucking god, and you haven't figured out how to work your camcorder.
Which is apparently from the 80s.
And why is it like that and not the holographic video that Eccleston left for Rose? Which looked much, much cooler and sort of... knew who TARDIS like.
Fucking hell, 50 years ago, they had Doctor Who space-time TV.
Yeah, exactly.
They've not moved on from that. They were hundreds of years in front. Well, no, they were a couple of years in front, and now they're decades behind.
I don't get that. But yeah, the tapping on the screen, like, is this thing on? Come on, man.
Fun?
Maybe the TARDIS just psychically communicates, yes, stop tapping me. I don't know. Bellin. That's all I got.
Okay, so well, the reason the DVD comes up, or the self-help video comes up, is because he has now clearly fallen in love. Martha doesn't know what to do in this situation. Martha has been rejected by the Doctor for Rose when Rose has just left the building. She's now rejected by the Doctor, or by John Smith, for Rose again, as he recounts his adventurous dreams.
Yep, couldn't even do a sketch of Martha.
Absolutely not. Doesn't recognize her now, even.
No.
Which, actually, why... That's... No, okay, fine.
Well, he's just had a dream with her in it at the beginning of the episode, but he's like, you're just the maid.
Oh, yeah.
For you.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he does actually say, you were in it.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, and now he's falling in love with the matron, and she's being rejected anew.
Sure.
Every time she goes into that room.
Yeah, also true. So the Doctor just likes white chicks, or is it just to hammer in the point? She is absolutely not going to be...
Well, I mean, she does actually say, cloyingly, what were you supposed to do when you fell in love with a woman? And it wasn't me.
Like, wait, she says that?
Yeah, she says that.
She said, you had
totally
to fall in love
that.
With a human. Oh, you had to pick her up.
Wow, I totally missed that.
No, there's a bit when she's trying to appeal to the video.
Yeah.
And yes, I think...
I know the scene, I just missed this line.
You fell in love with a human and it wasn't me. And I thought, you didn't need the "and wasn't me." Everyone in the audience was inferring the "and wasn't me" didn't need it.
Yeah, you could have just gazed longingly at the screen for a little longer.
Yeah, we're fine with that.
Okay.
Minor, though.
But also, the reason that he didn't leave a message about what to do if he fell in love was because, as a Doctor, he can never fall in love again after Rose. You can't conceive of it.
He wouldn't assume it, yeah.
Really bothers me. That specific link bothers me. I have a colleague at work who grew up as a sort of teenage girl.
Oh, you've mentioned this on the show so many times.
I think so, and so in love with the Doctor, and because I think it's a bit of a trope, this feeling, the Doctor and Rose. And then I think the writers were conscious of that. They're like, okay, now we can't fuck up this fan base by introducing... These people are so invested with the idea of the Doctor and Rose being the greatest love story of all time. I'm glad they go away from romance with the Doctor. They start to...
Oh, I can't wait for next series. Next series has got great companion.
Oh, no.
Yes, it does.
So good.
She's such a good companion.
Grace. Cannot wait.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait either, because either I'm going to have a hell of a time ripping the shit out of it because it's so bad, or at least I'm going to think it's so bad, or I will be very pleasantly surprised to be convinced and drawn to your weird dark side of this conundrum. No, I look forward to seeing the next season. Yeah.
But I did make a note that would Martha, with all the racism she's experiencing at the moment, not also hatch at this point a theory that the Doctor's kissing every white cast member I've
ever
seen.
That's exactly what I said. He clearly favours white chicks.
Yeah, so I'm...
That's fine, he can have a type.
Yeah, but I was a bit surprised that she didn't... Well, I guess, how do you go there? But...
Yeah.
It begged an obvious question.
Sure.
Which I agree with that you brought up.
Okie dokie. My next note is just no one seems to notice how weird the humanized scarecrows are, as in all these weird people who have been taken over.
Well, another fun writing point, just because this seems to be a circle jerk for Paul Cornell. I think all of the ancillary characters get just the right amount of depth to them. Like Jenny, her friend, gets a little bit of chat and that she's lovely. We get from Daisy from Spaced that she's a widow, you know, and all that sort of stuff. They get a little bit of depth, just a little bit of subtext in there that gives us, you know, that's helped us round out their characters as an audience, but not too much, not loads of exposition about them or how to feel about them.
Well, did you guys like the sort of express exposition from Daisy where she says, oh, I was just thinking about how my husband was killed in the war?
I did, actually, even though it's quite staccato and quite...
Like, I thought it was pretty, a little bit too, as in too much.
Oh, no, I was there with that because I was like... I don't know, you know, at a time where one wasn't supposed to be at all, you know, in it's war, king, country, all glory, that, yeah, I don't know, I found that okay. That was okay.
I guess I would suggest in the hands of a lesser actress, that line would have bombed.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yes. That's very, very possible.
Because this episode, for me, mostly did pass the why the fuck would you say that test, or why the fuck wouldn't you say something else test. And in this instance, you might expect her to go, I'm sorry, I have to leave, and be all enigmatic, and retreat to her quarters. Rather than, okay, I'm going to spill my guts to you as we walk around the village.
But then the thing is, I mean, the initial part is relatively matter-of-fact. I mean, obviously with some emotion in there, but just, I was thinking about my husband, you know, and then he sort of walks off. Rather than break down and... Because that wouldn't have been fitting as a matron in a school at that bit, you know, said that and fucked off and he went in and sort of, you know, consoled.
Well, she doesn't have to break down. She just has to not... accept his advances in that scene, and then maybe he asks her later, are you okay? And she'll just say, yeah, actually, I'm sorry if I behaved inappropriately. I couldn't help but, you know, be drawn back to the memory of my blah, blah.
Unless...
Or at some point, he sees a picture. Like, oh, who's that? Oh, I'm sorry, that's my husband.
Unless she's thinking, how do I subtly work into the conversation?
That I'm single.
That I'm available. That I'm on. Yeah.
Husband free since 1903.
Yeah. The word husband shot... Or South Africa hasn't come up in a conversation yet.
Oh, sorry. Am I boring you?
Cry me a river.
Yes, mate!
It's terrible. Both of you.
But she is, for the most part, happy in this episode. I really liked the scene where they're just walking around a hill. It's just nice to see the Doctor in a different place, in a different environment. And I liked her joke, a girl in every fireplace.
Ooh, wait, what? When did that come up?
Yeah, she's been reading his journal, and the Doctor is who he, John Smith, wants to be, zapping around in his dream universe.
Yeah.
And she says, yeah, a girl in every fireplace.
Oh, that's good.
Very nice.
I don't know.
She clearly paid attention while she read that.
Yeah, she's like, these fictional tales are great, but season 7's got a funny arc.
There's some pages torn out in the middle. There's a big gap. What's going on there?
Like, yeah, maybe we should record some of our thoughts and play it back to the people in our village. Yeah.
There's one more victim to be had by the scarecrow / family of blood, and that's Jenny.
Yeah, the chubby friend.
Jenny does a better version of scared abductee than Baines did.
Yeah, she did. But is that just the, well, we have a female character and therefore we can permit her, we can allow ourselves to write more terror and screaming into the scene as opposed to if it's a male actor?
Possibly, but she wasn't too, like, she was just, you know, she was visibly shaken. And
yeah, she was.
What was a much better...
And there was also, like, oh, sorry to cut you off there, but there was also, like, sort of the issue of class. because all the people, all of her captors are wearing the faces of people that she recognizes. And they're like these very posh students in the school, or the very posh man, like the upper class people that she's acquainted with.
She's used to people like Drew torturing her for things.
Exactly.
Like David Cameron and George Osborne and Bojo.
Synonyms.
Blah, blah, it's all completely unfounded. Because she drives a lot of the rest of the plot.
She does.
Jenny...
I love the scene where she gives it all away.
Oh.
Yes.
Tell me now.
Yeah. Oh, please, can we soundbite that? Mainly because I made a note of the minutes. 36 minutes in.
It's complicated. In what way? I just can't. It sounds so interesting. Tell me now.
That scene is incredible, so acted, and the way that Martha works out, because there's always those changes in tone, and I always wonder why the character hasn't noticed this weird fucking behaviour from across the table, but Martha really does,
and then
takes appropriate,
ingenious action.
Did either one of you also think, when Jenny goes, oh, sardines and ham, yeah, that sounds very good, did you also think fish fingers and custard?
Oh, No, I didn't.
At this Just point, me. I was thinking, which we almost alluded to earlier, well, they've retained enough of their memories to know which form room to go back to, but not that sardines and jam are not a good combination.
Sardines and jam, sorry, yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
Or mutton in a teapot. Having said that, really made me want some mutton gravy. Don't know why.
Okay.
So that was genius.
Yes, gorgeous scene, but isn't it kind of weird? And really what you want, or what you would expect, is everyone else should be reacting to their respective scarecrowed family of bloods, whatever, victims.
Laser guns. As well, by this point.
Well, like, why is no one reacting to Baines the way Martha's reacting to Jenny?
He's always been a rather odd fish.
Because it's because Martha has knowledge of these people.
Oh, so just because the other people aren't expecting it, they can't see it?
Martha knows they're being hunted, has probably encountered these people, is looking for weird stuff.
Yeah, but like,
yeah, she's no one specifically else is. The lookout for weird stuff.
Yeah, but really, Baines is super duper weird.
Yeah, but I mean, as your bunkmate, you just go, Baines is a fucking weirdo, isn't he? Like, that's what your thoughts, not great. Like, do you know what? I've not thought about this at all, but I bet he's an extraterrestrial assassin.
No, certainly not. But clearly, people would have gone, dude, you're really weird.
Dude, you're forgetting.
You are like super weird today.
You're forgetting that these people are all giant reptiles who run the country anyway.
Oh, true.
Takes one to know one.
Quite.
Okay, got another question for you about Martha. Why doesn't she just keep the fob watch?
That I don't understand. I thought that was like, if you had stolen it earlier, Martha,
we wouldn't be in this problem.
Maybe it's because, and I don't know why she wouldn't have immediately stolen it whilst he had been, you know, had in his sort of soul sucked out of him. Maybe she'd been dismissed for stealing. Like, she'd been the first person everyone looks at, the black maid.
But why even... No, she didn't have to steal it in the first place. Why doesn't she just carry it on her person?
Well, the doctor will go, where's my fob watch gone? And she'll go, oh,
no,
I just found it when I was cleaning here. Get out of here.
No, wait, hang on. In the beginning, the doctor goes, here, I am this watch, or this watch is me.
Yeah.
And he gives it to her. Mm. And then when we cut to John Smith's life, it's now no longer her fob watch.
Never have seen the watch.
Exactly. Yeah. She should just be carrying it around so that she can open it when need be.
Yep. Which, by the way, let's put a pin in this for the next episode, ladies and gentlemen.
Ooh,
it will become super important.
Inter-episodic pin.
You remember way more about part two than I do.
The opening of the watch. Let's all just for a second, and we'll come back in a fortnight's time.
Sure, but
not you, if you're listening to it as a podcast. You can probably just skip on to the next one.
We do need to talk about what happens when the fob watch is opened now. I mean, what do you think? You're not allowed to answer this because you clearly know what happens. Drood.
Yeah?
Do you remember what happens? Do you know what's going to happen?
Well, all I remember is Baines tilting his head and sniffing a lot. Is that what you're alluding to?
No, I mean in part two. Because I have no idea what happens. You know what happens, Nick.
I'm pretty certain, and I'm pretty certain it's infuriating. But we don't need to talk about that
now.
Yeah,
we put a pin in it.
Fine. But in this episode, the fob watch is opened by the kid, by Love Actually.
Yeah. By Little Bojo.
And whatever, like, the force of the doctor, like, it seems like it's the energy of the time vortex,
the essence. Heart of the sun and all that stuff.
Yeah.
He sees the universe turn, blah, blah, blah.
He absorbs some of it, is now able to, I guess he absorbs some of the doctor's identity, some of his memories.
I don't think Little Bojo does anything. I think that he just leaks out a bit of doctor and Bane smelt it.
No, I disagree.
I don't think it leaks into Timmy Latimer. I think he just connects with it in some way. I don't think it then becomes part of him and fuels his superpowers.
I think it does.
His superpowers exist before.
Yeah, sorry. I don't think it fuels his superpowers, but I do think that he absorbs some of it, because at one point he bumps into Martha and then turns around, and as he turns around, he sees Martha running away in the episodes, what's it called, when the hospital gets taken to the moon? Smith and Jones, yeah. He sees Martha running down a London street in modern-day England.
Mm. Yeah, that is what was weird. I didn't figure
that
out.
And he gets these flashes of the Doctor wielding a sonic, and, you know, he sees the TARDIS and so on. I definitely think that he absorbs some of the Doctor's memories.
I think that's a dead-end plot point. I think that there might have been a sort of parallel arc there that they unwrote.
Yeah, I'm just saying he sees them, and you're saying he either absorbs them or he sees them. I'm just saying he sees them.
I think he just sees them. I think he has a connection, but in no way a absorption.
Yeah, because of his shenning.
And what happens to all of these Doctor memories, do you reckon?
Little Frodo Borgio. Now, let's talk about the dance, because it's lovely. It was lovely that they go and it's a couple, and it's all very nice. Martha has slapped the Doctor at this point.
Yes.
Now, it was very easy to dismiss her, and I'm sure it would have been in 1910.
Mm.
But I feel like there's probably more to it. Like, go tell the headmaster. Go tell the other. I mean, because you don't employ her. The school employs her, right?
Mm, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Unless you can just take
He managed
servant.
To get her a job. He didn't employ her as his, like, personal...
Well, exactly. So you've just dismissed one of the school's maids, and then we'll go to hire another. Do you not need to tell someone about it?
Nah, Jenny will just do a double shift.
Fair enough.
You've already worked out the logistics of this. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I was there. Whatever.
Yeah.
At Gordonston, or wherever it's supposed to be.
But the Doctor's... Okay, so in that scene, she shows the Doctor the Sonic.
Mm.
And
what do you think of this?
He does seem
to... Bet you
want
to use it, don't you?
He does seem to remember it. At the very least, he remembers it from his dreams, right?
Oh, you'd think so. Yeah, he
doesn't just look at it and go like, whoa, that's a fancy-looking... Wand?
That's a thingamajig.
Hmm.
What a
nice,
what's it?
Nice pen, Martha.
Yeah, exactly. Now get out of my sight forever.
Electricity is hard come by. What the fuck is this?
Hmm.
Yeah. Mm. But at the same time, it doesn't all come flooding back instantly. Well, nothing happens. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so we end the episode. Shall we go there? We end the episode on the Family of Blood appearing.
Shooting everyone in sight.
With awesome weapons.
Fucking destroyed the vet.
Yeah, the poor vet outside. The
arms,
poor racist vet outside.
Poor.
What's also cool about that is, like, look, every generation didn't give a fuck about its veterans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, true.
Yeah, but he couldn't release a charity single. What's a guy to do?
Fantastic. How do I stay away from that?
Sorry.
That's it. Give me something to work with that.
No, fantastic CGI. I love that effect of just vaporizing people. Beautifully done.
Yeah, they vaporize a lot. That's what I'm saying, the brutality of this. It's actually,
yeah.
You believe the peril because you see it.
Yeah.
All the time, all over.
Yeah.
It's not a slow, like, trudging zombie inhabited by the sun. People just die. Like, I don't mind killing people. It's
You give me lip, I'll give you jip.
Quite. Yeah, and that's pretty much the end of the episode. They're trying to force...
Well, they have both Martha and what's-her-face, Daisy, at gunpoint.
Which is a brilliant cliffhanger.
Brilliant cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And you really believe Tennant's portrayal of a man that doesn't know what the fuck anyone is talking about and is freaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really like that.
But of course, we do know that in the same room, we do have Love Actually, and he does have the fob watch.
He hasn't worked it out yet, though. He hasn't figured out, you know, he just had it. It's the shinning. Or it's the ring. Whichever franchise you like best.
Yeah. And also, what's he going to do? Chuck the Doctor the watch... The Doctor becomes a Time Lord in front of them. They have the guns trained on
him. Is he going to become a
episode
over? Well, how is he going to become a Time Lord in front of them? Well,
no, the Doctor.
Know. Yeah, no, that's what I mean. How is he going to... Well, yeah, how
if
is he
don't have to plug back into the chameleon arch, then it will just retcon him hovering above him.
If that is what happens, I will call
Everyone,
bullshit.
Honest to God.
God, that is...
You're all going to lose your mind.
Is that how disappointing it is?
This is why you hate second parts, isn't it?
Yeah, very possibly. Jeez. Having said that, I think that's probably...
Let's call it.
Points. Let's call it. End of episode.
Yeah.
End of Human Nature. Wow.
Wow.
So next time on Doctor Who, you've got this amazing cliffhanger. There are guns pointed at Daisy from Spaced and Martha, and we see both of them after the credits have rolled next week.
Oh.
Hey, they're both fine.
That's true.
I mean...
That is true. So fine, we know that... Would you have expected one of them to get their head disintegrated on a family-friendly show?
What I would have liked is for them just to show a sequence of scenes with him and Daisy and leave Martha out of it completely. And that would have amped up the anxiety and the tension.
Oh, really? I think it would have been better to just not show any scenes of Daisy or Martha at all.
Equally, just him and the family of blood, I guess.
Yeah. I don't necessarily need to know why there's a next time on a two-parter.
Well, yeah.
I get a next time for an entirely new story arc, because you're wetting my taste buds, but...
Yeah,
but I've already had the amuse-bouche on that.
I don't know. I quite like to see the next time on Doctor Who in general, but I hadn't thought about this before, but you're absolutely right. I think it gives away a little bit too much.
I mean, Paul set up this almost perfect cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And he sat there watching, and he's like, Russell T, what the fuck have you done? So, yeah. But that's not his fault. So
no, not at all.
I'm not going to hold that against the episode.
Yeah. Reviews. Okay, keep it getting incredibly short. The Doctor, or Tennant, as John Smith, is incredibly charming. I don't mean charming in the sense that he very clearly gets down and dirty with Daisy from Spaced, but charming in the sense that I want to see him on screen. He's so good. All of those little scenes, wonderful, and he's mesmerizing and interesting and just, yeah, I like seeing him on screen. Daisy is good. Martha, however, steals the show. Whilst the Family of Blood are great and Baines is a very creepy guy and convincingly creepy, Martha is, for once, after how many episodes of seeing Martha being absolute garbage on Doctor Who, finally we get to see her with agency, with authority, taking the reins with more influence on proceedings than the Doctor himself.
We can see what Freema Aikman thought she was auditioning for.
Yes, exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if she hadn't read the scripts for the episodes to come, or she didn't know that she was going to definitely, most definitely leave the show, and she got to do this two-parter. She reads the script and she goes, holy fuck, it's finally happening. They're finally believing in my character. This is going to be great. And then they screw it all up anyway. Yeah, I loved it to bits. I'm just going to tie it up there. No, wait, one more thing. Scarecrows, bullshit, but I love it. They're very classic Who, and I think that actually the cheesiness and the nonsensical nature of having those scarecrows actually just bumps up the score. I'm going to give this, I love the balls out of this episode, I'm giving this a 4.2.
Echoing everything Ponkin said, I really liked the, you know, I mentioned it in the full review, but the depth, all those ancillary characters, it lifts the whole thing. It gives Martha the scope to have agency. It gives not watching the Doctor for another fucking 40 minutes was actually super refreshing, and watching him be essentially toothless, as you know, he can't have agency. He's stripped, so it's really on the rest of us as humanity, and Martha in particular as our champion. 1910's Britain or this particular town and this particular military academy is spot on. For I don't know much about it, but I believe that looked like a village that housed a military academy specifically. Looking at you, Drew.
I don't know much about it either, but I'm going to guess, like you, that it's spot on.
Quite. I really like... I think, like you, I like the scarecrows for the campy Doctor Who effect. And they're fucking menacing. The brutality of it, I think, really, really mirrors the whole brutality of what's to come in the First World War. I think that, you know, it's not shying away from what that period of time was like. Racism and all those sort of things. So tackling big subjects. And the cliffhanger's great. The romance is great. This is movie-level fucking writing.
This could
be a feature. Bolting two of the episodes together, I'd go to the cinema to watch this shit. But so with that in mind, 4.7.
Wow.
Nice.
All right.
Okay, finally, Doctor Who is good again. We've had two episodes that were so run-of-the-mill and so just lobotomizingly unoriginal at every turn that this was such a breath of fresh air, and I remembered why the show just entrances us in the first place. This is it. David Tennant, most of the time, he actually plays a believable, compassionate character. Like you say, I want to see him on screen. It's so refreshing. Martha has her best episode by miles and doesn't have to kowtow to the Doctor's prioritised narrative needs. She gets to do something. The episode groans with the weight of history. It recreates a fascinating period and sets it, realistically, in its tragic context. The scarecrows are horrible, in a good way. Not a single active use of the Sonic. My minor criticism is that Jessica Stevenson's character isn't Daisy, but I'll forgive her that, because she has depth and a good backstory. So, only one other point I would make. When did the Doctor calmly record his instruction video?
Oh, such a good question.
Well, there's a relative calm explanation of how the chameleon arc works and all those things. So there's a lead time.
Okay.
I think that they, let's say...
Wait, what do you mean?
When the flashback to the cold open, so midway through, Martha has the flashback.
Yeah.
And it's explaining the chameleon arc, what's happening, who this family of blood are, and all that. And that's quite a long time. So there must be a lead time between when they were being shot at, them escaping, and how long it takes the family of blood to track them.
So the TARDIS just tumbles through time indefinitely, or have they landed on
no,
Earth
no,
in the same
think,
place?
I think they've landed in 1910 Britain.
Then he records
and
it.
And they know that the clock is ticking.
Okay.
But these guys will turn up eventually. It might be a couple of weeks, it might be a couple of months, but they'll eventually track them. And so he said it. So he can record the thing, he can do the chameleon arc, he can go get a job, all that sort of stuff, you know, put the TARDIS in park or whatever the fuck it is. But it's, it, you know, still 2 months is menacing, isn't it? That's a menacing amount of time to know that someone's going to come and fuck
you. Wait, hang on. Have you given your rating yet?
No. And I would say that against that is that they're sniffing out the Doctor. If he's the Doctor, if he's a Time Lord at his destination, then he's basically just giving them all the more chance to show up immediately.
Yes, but, you know, if you don't not be a Time Lord, then you're giving them the chance indefinitely.
Mm. How long do you guys reckon that they've been in England?
2 months.
2 months. Oh, I do they say that? Yeah. Oh, okay.
My rating is 4.5.
Oh, nice. Very good.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Well, we have no listener minis for this one, but if you've listened to this episode immediately upon it having been dropped on the iTunes, you have 2 weeks to write a mini review for Family of Blood and send it in. So please do. If you have any comments, if you agree or disagree, please just pop a comment on whobackwhen.com. And otherwise, feel free to tweet us. Drew, how can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at DrewBackWhen.
It's DrewBackWhen. Yeah.
Nick, how can people find you on Twitter?
At Nickalele.
Drew, do you have a song for that?
I've got one. N-I-K-U-L-E-L-E, that spells Nick, ukulele, bit like ukulele, not quite ukulele, now that's done, let's move on.
Fantastic. Yes, perfect. That's the soundbite we're always going to keep.
Why are you so good at this?
Ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, you have no idea in what order we recorded that. You can find me as well. I'm at Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. What's next on the roster? The next classic is The Wheel in Space. The next new Who is, obviously,
Family of Blood.
And the next audio Who is
The Scapegoat. Oh, you had the Family of Blood.
I was going to say The Escape Goat, but okay.
Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Be rad and excellent to each other. Catch you next time. Ciao.
Bye.
Done. Kablamo. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's @WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?